It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Before student-athletes return to school in the fall, they're required to get physical exams. In recent years, an important part of the athlete's preparation has become baseline testing for concussions. How useful is the test called IMPACT, Immediate Post-Concussions Assessment and Cognitive Testing, in the management of concussions? Joining us in studio to address this question is Dr. Jonathan French, a neuropsychologist and clinical instructor at the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. Jonathan French, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Patrick Huber, director of the Heads Up Program at UPMC. Patrick Huber, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
If you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. We'd really like to hear from someone or the parents of someone who has a history with concussions. How was it treated? Were you able to resume your athletic career? How long did it take for you to be symptom-free and get back out on the field? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Jonathan French, what can you tell us about the concussion baseline test, IMPACT? How is it done and why?
Sure. So IMPACT is a computerized neurocognitive test, and it's done in preseason before the season ever starts. So we want to see how the kids' brains work before they're ever injured. It's about a 25 to 30 minute test that looks at things like verbal memory, visual memory, processing speed, and reaction time. And the goal is to get a good baseline to see where they are before they ever get injured. And then if they're injured, we test them again to see if there's any deficits in compared to where they were before the season ever started.
So if there's there's something that's registering lower on the scale than what they showed with the baseline test, then you know there's a problem?
Right. So statistically speaking, we look at what kind of variance would be there, what kind of change would happen with everyday testing. And if it's outside that normal window of change, we would assume that some sort of injury happened to the brain where it's not functioning as well as it did before.
And how does the test work? And how many kids take the test?
So, you know, thousands of kids take the test, and I'll let Patrick talk about the baseline initiatives, but most of the time what we do is we put them in a room, we sit them in front of a computer, and they take this 25 to 30 minute test in a supervised setting. We get the information right away. The neuropsychologist looks at the test data to see if it's valid, see if it's good testing, and then it's stored until the person is injured, or if they're not injured, we just retest them in a period of time.
Okay, and Patrick Huber, you know, what about some of the ways in which this information is harvested?
Yeah, so one of the things that we do is we partnered with the Pittsburgh Penguins Foundation, and they came to us back in 2011 and said, hey, you know, after Sidney Crosby had an injury and Ray Shearer's son had an injury, and they said, you know, how can we get in front of this? And we want to baseline test hockey players specifically. So we did. And what we did was we came up and we partnered with the Community College of Allegheny County. And now we have expanded that to Community College of Beaver County and Midwestern Intermediate 4 way up north. And what we do is we provide an opportunity for the parents to come out, get the kids baseline tested. We have an online registration process. They complete the information for us. And they can pick a location, date, time that works out best for their schedules and for the kids. And we go ahead and we provide the baseline testing with an education session first. And then we have proctors who are other athletic trainers in the room, and we go ahead and test them in large group settings, individual settings. We can test organizations that maybe didn't make the summer program, and they want to test again in August or September, and we can provide them an opportunity as well. So we kind of test in various settings, whether it's individual or group settings. So,
in addition to the testing, what is the newest thinking, gentlemen, among brain specialists on the best way to heal concussions? Jonathan French?
Sure. So there's no one right way to heal it. Every individual is different, and every individual concussion is different. So that's why it's important to make sure you do have an individualized plan or a tailored plan to the individual athlete to get them better. Some people need a little bit of rest. Some people need to get more active sooner. And it's important to figure out what they need in order to get them better the quickest. There is no medication, no cure, no steroids that individuals can take that will cure this thing. It's the combination of giving the brain the right environment to get better and then giving the individual treatment if they need treatment. But not one size fits all. So making sure you understand where the deficits are will help tailor the treatment and allow those kids to get back to play, back to life as quickly as possible.
Let's go to Tracy in Pittsburgh at 412-246-2002, who would like to join the conversation. Hi, Tracy. Welcome.
Thank you. I was just calling. I was listening briefly to the discussion, and I'm a college coach. So we use baseline testing for our athletes at the beginning of the season. And I think that I agree with the comment of there's no right one way. It's an individual. Healing from a concussion is definitely individual. And I firmly believe in baseline testing. I think it's a good benchmark for all the athletes. But I think probably it's the educational piece for parents and athletes and understanding that if you have a concussion and your friend has one, your healing may be different than your friend's healing process.
Tracy, let me ask you, what sport, where do you coach and what sport?
I coach at George Washington University. So I'm just visiting Pittsburgh. I grew up in Pittsburgh.
Oh.
And I coach lacrosse.
Okay. Well, that's another, certainly potentially full contact sport. And she is echoing what you said, Dr. French, about how it really differs from individual to individual. But Do things change from sport to sport? We're talking about football, but Tim Huber, Patrick Huber, you're looking at something that was initiated by the Penguins to deal with hockey concussions. Lacrosse is a sport where sticks and helmets are used and people get whacked upside the head. So does it differ from sport to sport, or is a concussion a concussion?
I think probably Dr. French could answer this probably better than I could, but really I think we've kind of almost subtyped concussions. We know there's different types. There's different things that will react to those. Risk factors, for example, a lot of times kind of play into some of the clinical treatment side of it. But I think he could probably talk better on terms of, like, how does that react? But in terms of, like, what she was talking about with education with the parents, that's one of the big hallmarks of our program. From a Heads Up Pittsburgh study or program standpoint, we've educated close to 40,000 people in the last 5 years just on concussions alone. And that's parents, athletes, coaches, referees, other athletic trainers, other healthcare professionals. It's really getting that information out to understand that when you do have a concussion, what should you do? I mean, that's usually one of the big questions that we see. And additionally, explaining that every kid's going to be different. To steal the phrase, life is like a box of chocolates, well, so are concussions. And just because little Johnny might have one concussion here, little Susie might react totally different to what's happening.
Dr. French, do things differ from sport to sport?
Certainly the potential for risk or the risk of getting injured differs, but the biomechanical forces are the same, whether it be you get hit with a lacrosse stick or hit with a hockey stick or you're going head-to-head with someone playing football. So the biomechanical forces that cause the trauma to the brain can happen whether it be sports, bike riding, messing around with your friends. So the sport or the activity doesn't matter, so to speak. It's actually the forces that play a bigger role than anything.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we are talking about concussions, particularly as they pertain to younger high school-aged athletes, and a test called IMPACT that measures that is a baseline test for athletes against which concussion symptoms can be measured to see whether an athlete has suffered some sort of a brain injury. And there seems to be some debate about how much inactivity following a concussion that an individual should have, just how long someone should lie down in a dark, quiet room and do nothing. What is the most recent thinking on this?
So the thinking used to be don't do anything. Go home, lie in a dark room, don't come out until your symptoms go away.
Well, didn't the thinking used to be before that, get back in there?
Right, sure, yeah. but now we're finding out it's this combination of if you do too much, your symptoms are going to be worse and it's going to take you long to get better. But if you do nothing and sit in a dark room all day long, it's going to take you just as long and you're going to create other problems like falling behind in school, becoming anxious or stressed out. And so we want to try to avoid those things. So the idea is initially rest is good, but we want to start to get those individuals more active as soon as we can. And figuring out where the problem comes with concussion is important. Not everyone's going to have the same symptoms. Some people are going to have a headache. Some people are going to have visual problems. Some people are not. So the individual that's got a big visual problem, you don't want them on TVs, computer screens, things like that. The individual that doesn't, maybe we allow them to do more visual-based activities. So depending upon the actual deficit that's presenting, we'll tailor those treatment recommendations. But the goal really now is a very short period of rest and then starting to get them more active in a progressive kind of reintegrate them back into their normal activities as best we can.
The idea of resting someone or having a person, you know, stay in a dark, quiet room for a day or two, what is the reasoning behind that? What does that do for somebody that has a concussion?
So if you think about concussions, what really happens inside the brain is the brain subtly moves inside the skull and creates this neurochemical, neurometabolic imbalance. And that does really need time to kind of settle down. There's not usually a structural impairment with concussion. Structural impairment meaning a bleed or a fracture. It's really this neurometabolic change inside the brain. And so it does need time to resolve. And a lot of times it will resolve relatively quickly if you give the brain the right environment to get better. So the idea is you rest the brain so you don't change that neurometabolic process as much as possible and give the brain a good chance to get better.
We're talking about concussions with our guests, Jonathan French, who you just heard, a neuropsychologist and clinical instructor at the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. Also with him is Patrick Huber, director of the Heads Up program at UPMC. Joining us, if you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. And we, again, would like to hear from someone or the parents of someone who has a history with concussions, how it was treated, what you went through, were you able to resume your athletic career, and how long did it take for you to be symptom-free and get back on the field? Are you still suffering the effects of a concussion or multiple concussions? What happened years ago when players might have been concussed and were held out maybe for a play or two and sent back into the game, were there as many concussions and we just didn't know about them? Some people who played contact sports years ago might tell you that, you know, we really didn't understand the true nature of what concussions were, and everything turned out fine. We didn't worry about any particular protocol. You know, when you hear people say that, as I'm sure you do, what goes through your mind?
So for me, I mean, certainly back in the day, you know, the 70s and even in the 80s, the appreciation for the seriousness in concussions wasn't there. And the fact that individuals went back to play with symptoms probably wasn't a good idea for their brain. And we know that when the brain is injured, it is more sensitive to A, less force causing a bigger issue or a more severe symptoms, and also that those symptoms can be catastrophic. And we want to try to avoid that as much as possible. The other fact is now more kids than ever are playing football, soccer, lacrosse. We're getting better at identifying the injury. So before, people didn't understand, weren't educated about the injury. We're also better at figuring out, hey, there's an injury there, pulling individuals from the game, but also there's way more kids playing sports than there was in the 90s.
But I guess part of what I'm wondering about is, so what happened to all the people years ago who there wasn't a concussion protocol for, there wasn't a way, you know, people might not even have known exactly what a concussion was. Are they walking on the earth like zombies today? What became of these people?
Obviously not. I mean, for the fair, you know, the majority of people, they go about their business, they get a concussion, they'll eventually get back to normal on their own if they manage it correctly. If we manage it well, the recovery time tends to be shorter, and we can guarantee, or not necessarily guarantee, but be more sure that they're not going to have problems in the future. There are many people that have had concussions that go back to normal and have no problems going forward. And then there are some people that have had long-lasting problems, whether it be migraine, headaches, concentration issues, focus issues, that they've adapted to or adjusted to, but not fully went away. And probably if they would have got treated, they would have got back to normal. But no, they're not walking around like zombies, obviously.
How much more susceptible to things like dementia, Alzheimer's, later in life, are young people who are suffering concussions today than those who don't play contact sports?
So, I mean, the thing about that is there's been no one direct causal link to look at sports as, and then head injuries and then causing dementia or Alzheimer's. That research is relatively new. It's coming out. We're better understanding the injury now and the link to later in life. We're better managing it now. You know, those guys who went back to play and now are coming to the age where dementia is more probable, maybe there is a link or a risk factor there, and they weren't managed well. So we think if we manage the injury properly, get the kids in a safe place, that should really mitigate or minimize the risks of any long-term potential problems that they may have in the future.
What type of visual-based activities do you use for people recovering from a concussion?
So if an individual has One of the most common ones is a convergence-based problem. This is your eyes moving in conjunction together. And a lot of times if there's that problem, we give them exercises to help strengthen that system. It's usually referred to as vision therapy or vestibular ocular therapy. Those will be therapeutic exercises that actually help retrain that system and strengthen it again, just like you would a knee injury, and start working that system out again to strengthen it.
And what differences do you see when you give follow-up baseline tests to athletes who have sustained concussions?
So, I mean, if you look at impact or a neurocognitive tool, it is not the... It's not a diagnostic test. It's not yes or no. Not every time is it going to identify a concussion. Most of the time, it's pretty good. And most of the time, when you see an individual that has a concussion, we look at their baseline, then we test them within 72 hours post-injury, and you're going to see some sort of deficit. That deficit could be pretty severe across all domains. It could be subtle. That's why it's important to have someone who's trained in looking at the test and evaluating it to figure out, is this a major deficit? Is this a subtle one? What deficits are there, and then how we can use that information to tailor that recovery plan for the individual.
And Patrick Huber, you're the director of the Heads Up program at UPMC, and Heads Up refers to something that an athlete should do, particularly a hockey player. You see the signs in the rinks for instructing players to do this. What does Heads Up refer to, and why should it be done?
So Heads Up, I think, truly started with the CDC's program, also known as Heads Up. But the Pittsburgh Penguins, ourselves, and the CDC all worked together to create Heads Up Pittsburgh. And like I said, it initiated itself because of hockey with Ray Shiro and Sidney Crosby getting injured. But, you know, even more so, since 2012, we're actually testing kids from any sport. So it doesn't matter the sport for us. Whether it's a kid that happens to be a boxer, a motocross rider, whether it's soccer, hockey, lacrosse, it doesn't matter the sports. But Heads Up refers to the concept of, you know, one, first of all, keeping your heads up, keep your head on a swivel, but more so is getting in front of this injury and actually making sure we have good quality baseline data so that should you get injured, now we can use that information from the clinical aspect with Dr. French, and making sure the kids get back appropriately, properly, they're not going back with injury otherwise, and that they're healing appropriately so that there are none of those long-term lasting effects that we think there are there, but we're not sure yet.
Some parents are not permitting their children to play football at all. What does the realization of some of the fears about playing the game mean for the future of high school football? At the rate concussions are happening at the high school level, will the game continue to exist in the future?
I mean, I certainly think, you know, in the 2000s, there was this great increase in football and sports in general, and now it's kind of leveled off, and we've seen a little bit of drop in participation because of these injuries and the issues that surround them. The truth of the matter is the rate of concussions is probably the same as it ever was. There's just more individuals playing, and there's better identification and treatment. And so, and one of the things that I believe is, as a clinician, is if you identify the injury right away, you give it the right treatment, and you get the individual back to normal or back to their baseline, they'll go on and live the same life that they ever did before, and they can go back to sports safely as they would have in the first place. There's always a risk in sports, but there's a risk in riding your bike. There's a risk in a motor vehicle accident. Those risks are all, we take them every day in life. And now that we're better able to identify this and actually treat it, it's probably safer in the long term from a treatment standpoint.
So as a medical professional, both of you as medical professionals, you're not necessarily advocating for the end of football as we know it.
No, I mean, absolutely. You have to, you should, we don't want kids to go out there and just beat their heads together doing Oklahoma drills, you know, 7 days a week. There has to be some sort of realistic modification as far as how much people are hitting. Is it necessary? Is it unnecessary? But you want to train individuals for football to hit properly, use proper technique. We don't want to totally eliminate that stuff, and I don't think we have to eliminate it. We just got to make sure we're doing the right things for our kids and make sure we keep them safe with education and the right treatment.
Are we seeing – I'm sorry, Patrick, you wanted to weigh in on that.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
And there's some organizations that have actually taken some very proactive stances to kind of help mitigate some of those circumstances as well. A good organization, for example, is the Seneca Valley Junior Football and Cheerleading Association, where we've worked with them specifically to actually create a policy and procedure as well as a comprehensive concussion policy within their own organization. And they actually mandate baseline testing for all their football and cheerleading participants, as well as they also have pieces and processes in place. So should an athlete actually have an injury, what they need to do to follow up, they need to get proper clearances from a medical professional like Dr. French, who's trained in the evaluation management of concussions, and then be able to get back on the play or back onto the field or back into play appropriately. But I think you're seeing other organizations starting to take those heads up programs and starting to tailor make them into a comprehensive policy and program for their sport, for their organization, to be proactive, to make sure that these kids are taken care of correctly.
Are we seeing more concussions today because of the nature of certain sports like football, or is it simply because of the awareness, more people recognizing the symptoms and therefore reporting that a concussion has occurred?
So the answer is probably both. I mean, again, like I talked about before, there's an increase in participation. There is an increase in size and speed and the amount of training that individuals are doing for certain sports. You know, we can always see that athletes are bigger, stronger, faster than they were 10, 15 years ago, which translates into more biomechanical force going into the head or the body, which creates concussions. And then there's also the awareness on it. It's gone from, you know, minimal awareness to now there's a hyper awareness. But the combination of the two has created this, you know, concussion kind of hyper awareness, both in the media and at the high school level.
Even if a student has made it through a season without a concussion, should a student rest and have another baseline test before resuming another sport?
So, Patrick, you can talk about how often we baseline test if you want.
Yeah, I was going to say, so in terms of baseline testing, kids who are between the ages of 7 and 12, they should actually have a baseline test every year. And obviously that's because of we know they cognitively will increase and change over that first few years. And then once kids turn 13, they should actually get a baseline like every 2 years. Now, that's not a hard and fast rule. For example, if you have an athlete who's been injured and they just recently came out of the return to play program, you know, it may be 6 months later and they have the opportunity to come into the heads up program and test during summer. That's certainly perfectly okay, and they should. But beyond that, it should be each year for those younger kids. And then once they hit about seventh grade or so, they should go every 2 years.
And then, you know, from the resting after the sports participation, there have been a few studies that have looked at baseline testing then individuals that have not had a concussion and then testing them again after the season, and there have been no deficits. So there don't seem to be any, you know, subclinical things that we're picking up dramatically that would require the individual to rest after a season even without a concussion.
We've been talking about concussions and baseline testing for concussions for high school athletes, particularly those who are going out to play football, as many will be again this fall, and the football season's right around the corner. So we've been talking with two individuals very busy in working to prevent and to manage the treatment of concussions in sports like football. Dr. Jonathan French, a neuropsychologist and clinical instructor at the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery, and also Patrick Huber, director of the Heads Up program at UPMC. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us off.
Yep. Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, the Lookup Line is a new device designed to prevent head injuries in ice hockey. How does it work, and does it make the game safer? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.